Hey guys, I'm Adam Rappaport, and this is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. All right, this week we are playing a segment from our live podcast that we did at the Bell House in Brooklyn back in November. I chatted with Carla Lolly Music about BA's best spaghetti and meatballs. Might have had a few disagreements, a few differings of opinion on the matter, but you can find the recipe at bonappetit.com. And also, one other thing to keep in mind, in 2019, we are definitely going to be doing more live podcasts. It was a really good time. We sold out this one, like 350 people, standing room only. We had food from the BA Test Kitchen, drinks, you name it. Good old time. We will let you know about those probably on our Instagram feed and our newsletter, as we did last time. All right, let's do this. Here we go.
Hello, hello, hello. I'd like to welcome you all to the historic Bell House Theater for the second ever Bon Appetit live podcast tasting. Taping, sorry. It's a taping. You're not taping now, I hope. This is actually extremely exciting for me. Oh, my name is Emil Stonek. I'll be your host for the evening. This is actually extremely exciting for me because this will be the first time that I actually ever hear a whole episode of the podcast. I've been on it. I've never listened to it. I always listen to podcasts when I'm in the shower or when I'm falling asleep, and those are both times that I don't want to hear Adam Rappaport's voice. Those are called boundaries. So, without further ado, I'd like to invite our food director, Carla Lally Music, and editor-in-chief, Adam Rappaport, onto the stage for a live argument about one of our recipes. It will be a bloodbath.
All right, so many people out there. Good Lord.
So many people.
So many.
This is not usually what it's like when we do a podcast.
Yes, normally it's just Carla and me. And then Emma. Emma's our producer. I don't know if you hear us mention Emma. She's somewhere back there, backstage, making this all happen. So thank you, Emma. Oh, wow, you're Instagramming.
Well, no, I'm just taking video to post later.
Okay. So you're Instagramming. All right, so guys, we are going to be talking about BA's best spaghetti in meatballs and how recipes get developed in the BA Test Kitchen. And so my first question, Carla, what differentiates a BA's best recipe from all the other recipes in Bon Appetit? I'm the editor-in-chief. I don't even know the difference.
Right. Great question. I think, in general, our recipes, you know, are the best. But when it's BA's best, we're trying to, it's a certain kind of dish. It's got to be like a super iconic, classic, like a dish with a pedigree, a dish that everybody knows, a dish that people have opinions on, dishes that never go out of style. And then trying to really engineer the most perfect version of that dish. So like a seminal version, if you will.
So cheesecake, chocolate chip cookies, all those sort of things. All right, so when we were developing this recipe for spaghetti and meatballs, you and I had a few arguments about this. So let's get it, the process, like how this recipe came to be, and I don't, do you want to do sauce first, meatballs first? Like, how do you want to do this?
I think for us, like when we start with a dish like spaghetti and meatballs, that everybody has an idea of how it should be. One of the first things that happens in the test kitchen after we assign the recipe and, like, you know, whoever pitched it is going to work on it, we have that moment where we all sort of stand around and look at each other and we're like, what is spaghetti and meatballs? Like, what
it's,
does it
it's
take?
It's not that complicated.
But then you get into it and it's like there are all of these choices that you have to make, like how the meatball's going to be made and the sauce and how do you eat it.
Are we using just beef? Are we using beef, veal, pork? Are we browning them in the oven? Are we doing it in a pan?
Do you have that image of like the nude spaghetti with the sauce and the ball on top? How big are the meatballs going to be? You know, a lot of things have to be explored.
I feel like we should start a band called Nude Spaghetti. Okay, so do you want, again, do you want to start with the balls or the sauce?
Let's start with the sauce because the recipe, the first thing you do is you make the sauce.
Okay, I have lots of opinions about sauce. They don't necessarily jibe with your and Chris Morocco's opinion who developed this recipe. Your sauce takes a while.
So, yeah, it does. This is a sauce that starts with two 28-ounce cans of tomatoes. And when you put those in a pan, it's very liquidy at the beginning. There's a lot of thin liquid. There's kind of hard, kind of raw-ish tasting tomatoes. They need to be broken up, and they need to cook for a while, and that's flavor development.
Okay, do you do the thing where you crush the tomatoes in your hands?
Yeah, so the sauce starts with some olive oil, some basil, a little bit of garlic. There's no onion. There's no... We're not putting carrots in this marinara.
Yeah.
And Chris's motivation, or where he was in his head, was, you know, it's sort of like a ragu type of tomato sauce. So there's not a lot of like extra stuff going on in that sauce. So you're breaking up, you're crushing the tomatoes as they go in to the pan, and then it simmers, gentle simmer. We're not like hammering the sauce, as Chris said.
Restaurant lingo.
Yeah. And it goes for like, you know, 60, 70 minutes.
Okay. I mean, full disclosure, I'm like a Jewish guy from Washington, D.C. You and Chris are both like Italian American, so you probably have a bit more experience at this than I. But, okay, first of all, can I use just pureed tomatoes instead?
No.
Why not? That's naturally smooth. I like the crushing thing, it's fun. But don't you want them already smooth?
I don't believe in whatever the ratio of flesh to water. Like, I'm not confident that what I'm getting out of a can of puree. And also in pureed tomatoes, a lot of time there's additional puree added. So it's tomatoes and tomato puree added to the puree. So it's like kind of thick and it can be a little bit gummy. So just do as recipe is written, I say.
Okay. I also like sometimes to do a little less cooking to have a fresher tomato taste than that sort of cooked down extracted taste.
Yeah, but this isn't a fresh tomato. It's canned tomato. And if you have ever like tasted like a kind of not fully cooked canned tomato sauce, it's got that kind of a raw, you know, Chris described it as like a green pepper flavor, which I thought was really
Why does green peppers get such a bad reputation?
They're terrible, yeah. But don't get me started.
I would say green pepper is the most hated ingredient in the Bon Appetit test kitchen.
You know who loves them?
Who's that?
Brad Leone.
Oh, Brad. Yeah. The one guy over there, yeah.
He will eat them like an apple.
Did him and Delaney try to put green peppers like in the cheesesteaks or something?
Yeah,
they were trying
they
to always
I think
do
that
green,
they did, yeah. And they I think that they were successful.
Yeah, unsuccessful. So, okay, sometimes, again, not Italian, but sometimes I've heard that people will put like a pinch of sugar in the tomato sauce. Can
right.
I do that?
I don't think you're going to need to. So that long, slow-cooked simmering that's happening with the tomato is going to minimize all of the acidic flavors that are naturally there, and it's going to bring out that like that sweetness, a little bit jammy, not caramelized, but the sauce should be sweet enough.
And the acidity will go away. Okay. I have lots of questions.
I think that's why people add carrots. We were talking about this.
Oh, yeah, like, the sweetness.
Yeah, or like... We didn't add onion to this sauce either, which was, it just is another ingredient that felt extra and not really essential.
Extra.
Very.
Okay, what about, so you're simmering the sauce.
So that's going for like an hour.
That's insane. what about, okay, sometimes when you go to the store and you ever go to like the Italian place and there's so many different canned tomatoes and it's kind of overwhelming.
Yes.
And some of them have the basil in the can.
Yeah.
Should I do that or no?
Yeah, that's okay.
That's okay?
Yeah, as long as they're whole peeled tomato.
Because like sometimes, I think that this recipe, it literally calls for 2 leaves of basil. And I'm like, I have to buy a giant head of like thing of basil and I'm going to use 2 leaves.
You could use the basil in the
can.
Okay,
basil in the can. Okay,
yeah,
sorry, Chris.
Fine.
Hope that's okay. All right, so we got the basil simmering.
The sauce
basil,
is simmering,
the sauce
yeah.
simmering. So that's happening.
Yep.
And is this like in a pot, do you think? Or is it like in a big sort of like saute pan? Or like how would you do this?
I think
this?
It's in a large pot. I can't remember. But like a Dutch oven.
I mean,
oven.
How would you do this at
a
home?
A Dutch oven. A yeah. Dutch oven would be perfect
like a,
because
like
you've
either
got...
either an oval or...
Yeah.
Because
you've got like a
something.
Good amount of evaporation, but not so much that you have to babysit it or it's gonna go too fast. And then you're stirring and you're scraping and you're like, oh my God, it got too thick, da da da. Like you want little blip blips going.
Blip.
Can kind of turn
blip.
Your back on
blip,
that.
Blip.
And you need to turn your back because you have to make the balls.
Okay, so the balls. All right. Let's talk meat, first of all.
Yeah.
What'd you guys went with?
100% buff.
buff. Okay, yeah. So like beef, like I know when we make like smash burgers, we want a lot of fat because you want that juiciness and that unctuousness.
Yeah.
Do you want a lot of fat in the meatballs also?
Yeah, that was important in this as well. 20% fat, which is a thing that when you're buying ground beef, you can buy that very reliably. Like even if you're buying the kind of pre-vacuum packed brick of ground meat, if it says 20%, you're going to get 20%.
Yeah. When you see like 15% lean or 10% lean, walk away. It's never good.
Agreed. And you want that fat and the flavor, but also in not calling for like beef, veal, and pork, which is how I had made meatballs a lot, you know, you're just getting a very consistent, it's like super consistent. And that's,
I also feel like beef, veal, and pork is something you did because your mom did and because your grandmother did, but then you're also like, wait, why do I need to buy veal? Like, what is this adding to the equation? Or...
Yeah, it's very tender and it's a little bit sweet and it's like there are reasons and there when we went through this whole same thing when we were working.
Let's talk about that just in terms of the process and like when you're testing this recipe, are you guys literally doing like, are we gonna make beef meatballs today? We're gonna make beef veal and meat pork tomorrow, and then we're gonna taste beef and pork. And like, are there how many iterations actually happen?
So I actually brought the file, the official recipe.
Wow, there's a file.
The official recipe testing file, and we went through this like 7 times in a lot of different versions. Plus,
over what period of time?
That's a great question. I could look at all the dates, but it took a couple.
Sorry to interrupt, Carla. But so this is on our October issue, 2000. I never interrupt her.
Never.
2017. So that, just to give you a sense of how like the print magazine works, this issue shipped mid-August to come out mid-September, because that's the weird thing. The October issue comes out like September 15th. You're shipping it August 15th. The recipe probably needed to be done July 15th, realistically.
Something like that.
So it's kind of crazy. So you're working that many months ahead. And in this case, so in the middle of summer, you're making a lot of spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah, I don't have dates of every single time, but I do remember that beyond what's in this file, I remember coming into the test kitchen and Chris would be making the meatballs again. And I was like, Chris, is good. Like, we're done. They were great yesterday. And he's like, there's one more thing I need.
I will say this, like when you're testing spaghetti and meatballs, no one else at work complains that there's more meatballs to be tasted. Like, guys, meatballs, 3 p.m., come on down.
It was more like, what are you running through this time? It's like, one little thing I just wanted to check another time. So there was like a lot of versions of sauce and a lot of versions of the meatballs, but it looks like from the beginning, Chris made that decision. It was 100% beef.
Except it wasn't 100% beef, Carla.
That's true. We did feel a need. There was a little...
point of contention.
A little missing something. Yeah. And that came into the recipe in the form of prosciutto, which isn't that weird.
Really? You guys are like, did you say prosciutto? And everyone's like, mm. Is it that easy?
It is really easy these days. We talked about it. We debated it. It is really easy these days to find the pre-sliced prosciutto in the cold case of the refrigerated case where the cheese is and stuff. You can buy prosciutto there. You don't have to go to like and get your prosciutto. I can do that because I'm Italian American, so that's okay.
Okay. So all right, So this is where a lot of times Carl will come to me, I'm like, guys, can we talk about this recipe? And my feeling was, I knew that Chris liked the notion of going just with beef because it was consistent, one type of meat, you knew the fat content, you knew the flavor profile, as we say. And then for that something, he wanted a prosciutto. And I was, is it prosciutto or prosciutto?
Prosciutto.
All right. Anyways, and my feeling was like, who here would go out and buy, because prosciutto's not cheap.
No,
right?
It's not
like
cheap.
$28 a pound or something insane like that.
At Eataly,
yes. And I was just like, that's not funny. No, I was would I do that? Would I go buy prosciutto just to make meatballs?
Right.
Would you guys buy prosciutto to make meatballs? Okay, what do I know?
It turns out to be.
Carla's gonna use this as ammo the next time we're having an argument about something.
I'm like, remember when we were in front of the live audience? I think that we were like, huh, that's crazy. Like, why prosciutto? And adding something for no reason just to do something different is like not a thing that would be supported and applauded.
Yeah.
But the prosciutto is actually bringing like a saltiness, a depth, a little tiny bit of funkiness, but not in a way. But
it's
in kinda, the way
it's
that
it's kind of like anchovies and Caesar salad dressing.
I was
right?
gonna say, well, it's a little bit like anchovies and Caesar. Like you can't have Caesar with any anchovies.
Well, no, I know, but it provides that sort of funky umami.
In the same way that like the Parm is also giving that depth of flavor and umami and saltiness and like some cured flavor, and like a little bit goes a long way. So it's only 1 pound of beef to make 12 meatballs. And you've got like 2 slices of prosciutto that are finely chopped, and they just disappear. It's not like strands of prosciutto are like coming out when you bite into the meatball, but it did kind of, it's a big bang for the buck.
But even if you buy the Beretta prosciutto, like the pre-sliced prosciutto, it's fine.
So how does this all come together then?
Right. So how you make that mixture. So there's, in the meatball mixture, there's the squozen out bread, right?
Squozen is a Carla Music trademark phrase, by the way.
Everybody knows what it means when you say it. So you have bread that's not stale, but you do soak. And then that was a decision too, like soaking in milk, soaking in water. Chris went with the water. He didn't believe like the milk is not doing anything, and like you're squeezing it out also. So you make a mixture with the cheese, the Parm, the eggs, the squeezed out bread, ricotta.
Thoughts on a lot of times people will use breadcrumbs instead of the bread.
Yeah, you could. We didn't want to use the like super fine, like that 4-H, like the canister, because the idea that those tiny little shards are going to do any absorption. So the bread is really there to absorb some of the liquid, but also to keep the balls tender. So that keep the balls tender, guys.
I'm not saying anything.
Because it's kind of getting in the way of the proteins and the meat from getting too like dense and too like dense and balled up kind of. So that's why the bread is there. It's not really for flavor, it's more for tenderness. So you have your eggs, your bread, your ricotta. All of the
and
spices.
The ricotta kind of brings a rich fattiness.
A richness. It's not too fatty, but it also helps with the tenderness.
It's not too fatty. It's all fat. It's cheese.
Ricotta,
that's all
but
it
it's
is.
Not like a high fat cheese. Not like a yes, sure, fatty. Yeah. Yes, great.
Not bad fatty. Good fatty.
Yeah.
Like keep you warm in the winter. Fat.
Right, and the ricotta in a weird way gives them a lightness. And the mixture you'll think when you're making it is like too. It seems too wet. Like you can form it into a ball, but it's not like super tight, or you can pack it into like a bar burger or something. It's like they're kind of wobbly, and in fact that merited a third
wobbly
a little bit. It's like when you put it down, it's like the hips want to squeeze out the side a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
So we have these wobbly balls,
right?
Okay, now let's be honest. When you were a kid,
yes.
And your mom was making wobbly meatballs.
Yeah.
Would she pinch off a little of the raw meatball meat to give you a taste?
Yeah, she would. And back
How
in the day.
People here, are the people old enough that was still allowed when you were growing up?
Yeah.
A few of them, yeah.
Do you remember that too?
Yes, but my mom, we never had meatballs. Dad was Jewish, mom, Polish Catholic, converted.
Uh-huh.
So we had a lot of meat. We had meatloaf like every Thursday night. So there's always meatloaf with the 3 bacon strips on it.
Nice.
And you would fight over the bacon strips, you know?
Yeah.
So I would always have like the raw meatloaf as a little kid. Like,
and
here's
a
little.
Pinch. And it's weird thinking back on that now because it was delicious. I remember also
what my mom would do.
Basically,
you eat steak tartare.
I know.
Thing.
And now it's like, oh,
but I will say this. If you're afraid. Yeah, I know. You would never give your kid that. If just send some raw meatballs to school with your kid. They can't have peanut butter and jelly at schools these days, but they can have raw meatballs. But if you're making meatloaf or meatballs or anything, you always want to do that thing where you pinch off a little bit and fry it up and then taste it to make sure how much salt. Do you need more salt? Is it salty enough, et cetera?
Totally. And that's a very important thing because once they're all cooked, it's the game over.
Yeah.
So whenever I make meatballs, there's always one that is like the last one that you get out of the bowl, and it's
it's like the runt. Yes. You know, it's like
it's not an actual ball. It's more of
it's
a smidge.
Not, it's right. It's just not as big as the other ones. And
for the cook,
that's the taster. Yeah. So that's a really good idea. That one you should roll around in a little bit of fat and make sure it tastes good.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We got the sauce burbling.
Yeah.
We've got the balls, the warbly balls rolled out. They're on a sheet tray. You've washed your hands, perhaps.
For sure.
They also, if you ever make meatballs and you have that weird coating of fat all over your hands, and like this is like, you're like, okay, I got to wash my hands. At this point, the next question, there's three ways to go about this, actually.
Sure.
The first two are obviously, do you roast them in the oven on a sheet tray?
Broil.
Broil.
Roast?
I don't know.
Okay.
Or do you do... Well, okay. Or
I thought you
in
were going to go to broiler. You're
broiler?
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't work in the test kitchen.
You've made... But, and you also love a broiler.
I just thought you were like... That's a whole other podcast we can get to.
Right. So it's like to brown or not to brown. And if you are going to brown them, how are you going to do it? Are you doing it stovetop? Are you going to do it under the broiler? I have broiled meatballs. I'm not going to lie.
Doesn't it just get the top though?
Yeah, that's the thing. It kind of just gets the top. It throws a lot of fat around the inside of your oven because it's like, you know, kind of cooking off.
You also get those weird little loogie-like mucilaginous things of fat on the bottom of the pan that are actually really delicious. And you're like, should I eat this? I don't know.
Weird little blobs of protein. Yeah. And then also you're heating up the meatball like kind of maybe more than you want to because even though it's only the broiler, the oven is on. So we brown the meatballs. And I guess the other way is to not brown at all and to just put like weird meat dumplings straight into the sauce.
So I've done that. Years ago, I did an article on when I was in Milan for work one time at this restaurant, Dongio, D-O-N-G-I-O. And the cook, the father, who was like probably 80 years old at that time, and he would make the meatballs, and he would use a bottle of pureed tomato sauce out of the bottle, some olive oil, and he would just make all beef meatballs and just drop them in there like little dumplings. And so on the downside, they wouldn't get browned and caramelized.
Right.
But I think what was kind of cool about it was all that sort of fat and stuff in the meatballs would naturally sort of leach out into the sauce.
Yeah, and you're getting that with these two because you're browning them.
Yeah, so what are we doing with this recipe?
So we definitely wanted to brown them and used a nonstick skillet, actually, because there's so much, there's like so much Parmesan and the ricotta and the surface of the meatball, so that if you use a nonstick pan, like all of that kind of stays on the meatball instead of sticking to the pan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I usually do a cast iron skillet and like a lot of oil when I do it at home. And this recipe doesn't call for that much oil at all in a nonstick pan. And you get, because there's all of those ingredients in there, it browns pretty quickly. So it really is still raw in the middle. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds.
Thing is when you do it in the pan, you get those like flat-sided meatballs, you know, and you kind of end up with a meat triangle instead of a meatball.
I made Sunday ragu a few weeks ago, and I used this recipe for the meatball portion. And I was turning them over, and I'm like, there is no way to keep this thing round. It is just like literally impossible. But
that's like if you have the job of the food stylist, you're like, figure it out, dude.
Right.
Make it look good on the cover.
I know. Yeah. What do they do? They might freeze them and then
that's a good idea.
And then they don't like slump. Anyway, so browning them and then they go right into that sauce. And at the time that the meatballs go into the sauce is in like a great place. You know what I mean? It's like the sauce is
delicious on its own, and the meatball is tasting really great. And then when they get together, they're like, you're great, I'm great, but together, like, we're going to be amazing, you know?
You complete me.
Exactly. And it's like, I want to give everything that's great about me to you, and but at the same time, like, everything that's great about you is, like, coming to me, and, like, you just have to stop at the point where, like, the sauce has given great flavor to the meatball, and the meatball has given, like, amazing flavor back to the sauce. But if you go too far, the meatball will give too much of itself. And then
again, it gets dried out.
And then you get kind of a dried out, washed up.
Is that Rabbi Hillel, the whole, if I'm not for me, who will be for myself, or if I'm too much only
that's
for me?
That's your, more your department.
It's not an Italian.
Yeah.
All right, so you got the meatballs in the sauce. We're in a good place. You've got pasta in nicely salted water.
Yes,
that's
definitely
going. How do you make it all together and happy?
So actually, at a certain
point, I have
opinions
about this.
Okay, well, do you want to share your opinions?
Well,
how
would
you do it?
I would say it's kind of a conundrum. I would say opinion / conundrum, because you want I want the pasta coated in the sauce,
right.
But then where do you take the meatballs out?
Yes.
Like, how do you? Like,
yeah, they are totally
orchestrated it all, because you can't toss them with the meatballs and the meatballs break up.
No, and this is different than, like, a lot of our pasta recipes at Bon Appetit will have you, you know, bring the pasta into just the right amount of sauce, and you're tossing it, and you're adding pasta water, like a cup of pasta water, and making
and it makes it nice and
getting this great emulsion going,
emulsion.
And like, yes, and Adam's favorite phrase, saucy glossy, is happening. But this is
the first five pasta stories we did at BA for like the first 5 years. I'm like, they're not saucy and glossy enough. Why aren't they shinier?
There are multiple food stylists walking around New York City today who are like, oh, the saucy glossy. But it's a real thing, and that's a real thing that happens when you make that kind of pan sauce. This is different. So there's more sauce than you need to coat the pasta, and also the meatballs are 100% in the way. So you got to get the meatballs off and get them back on the sheet tray somewhere, keep them warm, and smoothing out the sauce. You could take a potato masher, which I actually don't own, or an immersion blender, or do something, use the back of a spoon.
Or you could just buy pureed tomatoes.
yeah, go to Milan, Don Joe.
Yeah. Don't mock Don Joe.
Was that a GQ assignment, or was that
in
the BA
days? Don't worry about it.
So then you smooth
this
out.
This guy was so badass, the old father, the, how do you say, Jay Nona, what's the?
Nona, yeah.
Oh, that's grandma.
Yeah.
What's grandpa?
I think it's Nono. Yeah.
Cooked in a turtleneck, like a wool turtleneck with an apron on. I'm like, that guy's badass.
What color was it?
It was like burgundy. It was like meatball colored.
Okay, so you smooth out your sauce. The meatballs are out of the way. The pasta's al dente. And then the noodles do go right into the...
Into your Dutch
sauce,
oven with all the sauce.
But instead of taking out like 2 cups of pasta water, you actually remove a couple cups of sauce. Because we want to be able to sit down at the table. And this was a big thing when we had spaghetti and meatballs. And be able to pass...
Oh,
extra sauce.
It's like extra gravy at the Thanksgiving table.
Exactly.
You already filled up at the buffet, but then you want some gravy at the table also.
Exactly. So you take out scoop out some of that sauce, pasta goes in, and you are tossing it around and making sure that it's coated and that it's the right consistency and it tastes good. And then you platter it or get it onto serving platters or take all the pasta and divvy it up on your bowls, and then you're putting the meatballs on top and extra sauce on top of that.
So you got the spaghetti's fully sauced.
Yeah.
You put like 2 to 3 meatballs on each one.
It's 3, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then a shaving of parm, perhaps?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Why not? I would, a thing that my mom used to do, she would serve a little bowl of ricotta also.
Wait, what?
Yeah, on the table, and you would add like a little dollop. A dollop of ricotta.
Wow.
It's delicious. Nice in a fresh tomato sauce, too.
Yeah. Good Lord.
Yeah. But, I just want to say we've done lots of other versions of spaghetti meatballs. Like, and I said this recently in a newsletter, and a lot of cat lovers got really mad at me, but there are a lot of ways to skin a cat, you know? And
wait, did they really get mad at you?
No, we got, like, a lot of upset emails.
You literally can't say anything these days
People
without getting
like,
in trouble.
People were like, really? Skin a cat? Yeah. Really? It's like the extra
Not
really.
Not really, figuratively.
But this version is supposed to be that thing. Like, more, it's a Sunday practice. He does that. See, nobody can see that when we're in the studio.
So when
but
we're
the
on
hand
recording,
is yeah.
The big problem when we first started doing the podcast was we would talk over each other too much, or mostly I would talk over. So now I'm like, I'm not going to say anything, but I'm going to raise my hand to let Carla or our friend Gabe know that I want to go next. But if you do this way, do you bring the Dutch oven to the table with the spaghetti, and then you also bring the extra meatballs, and people they can then double up or
you
whatever
could do that.
Afterwards?
Sure. Or you could, yeah, you could do that.
Yeah.
Or right. You could plate it up in the kitchen.
No, I'm saying no, but after you plate it, because I want seconds or I want an extra meatball after I've gone through my first, you know.
I don't know. Then you would have to hold back, right? You would like give everybody two. There's just a finite amount of meatballs.
What?
So you could give, yeah, it's like 12. So you give
Shut
everybody
up.
Two
oh.
And then be like, for your
what
seconds,
if,
you can have.
Or what if it's just you and me have dinner? Then we then, get six each.
Then we're just like yeah. Eating out of the pot.
All right. Thanks, guys. Be back shortly.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.